Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was heads or tails.
Lemon face. Lemon face. All
right. Are you still recording?
No.
Oh, thank
I am now, though.
Oh.
Can I get one of those energy drinks?
Yes, sir. Oh, can I get one of them?
Can I get one of them, dude?
You're going to bust another one?
Yeah, I need one.
Fuck,
bro. That's my second one in the last couple hours.
Good Lord.
Dicks out, gentlemen.
Dicks out, gentlemen.
I saw you were
actually... He's about ready to drop it.
Holy shit.
He's like, oh, he's serious. He's going to do a thing. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Who Goes There Podcast, episode 437. This is Jorge.
This is Jacob.
And this is Ree.
Oh, boy. We spent an hour talking about all kind of funny things.
Yeah, we had a lot to catch up on.
We did.
Stuff we can't talk about or generally would be a bad idea to talk about at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Goings on in the world and whatnot.
Yeah.
The world breaks everyone, and afterward many are strong at the broken places, but those that will not break it kills. You know, it kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. And if you're not one of these, you can be sure it will kill you too, but there will be no special hurry.
Wow.
That's a Hemingway quote from the movie we're going to review later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched that movie 3 months ago.
I watched it last night again.
No, I rewatched it, yeah.
So how you been?
Pretty good, man. Pretty, you know, it's end of semester for me that ended. Work's been fucking,
It's been
very busy, very good. Yeah.
All right.
We got freaking, right now we have 4 dogs at the house.
That's a nightmare.
Yeah, because we're fostering an older dog right now. Also.
Shocker.
Yeah. We got little Ghosty, who's a new little pup, and he turns out he's a Dachshund Chihuahua Terrier mix.
That dog's all fucked up.
He is.
I think of that Aesop Rock song about the dog. What dog is that?
What's that, track 2? Track 3?
I think so. Yeah, movie night.
That's
a
great fucking album, man. Yeah. God dang.
Yeah, there is a new Aesop Rock album, which is dope. I've only listened to it once.
There's songs about dogs, songs about snails.
There's a new Model Actress album. There's a new Viagra Boys album.
Yeah.
It's dope. It's a good year for music.
Yeah.
Definitely. Some of us are going to go see the Viagra Boys.
Yeah.
You can still go. We got one more, right?
No, I appreciate it. It's too many shows for me.
Well, some of us are going to go see Model Actress in LA, dude.
Oh, God. Never would I ever.
Oh, come on.
I like one song.
They didn't grow on you more?
No. I tried. I gave it a go.
No, that's good.
No,
I appreciate it, man. You know, I'll let them know. I'll let them know, like, I had one dude and he liked one song.
He likes the one.
You're doing a bunch of house renovations.
Oh, too many. Yeah, I'm redoing the floor in my entire house, which means it's like a room by room fuckery of my sanity.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's a lot. We just did two rooms, a bathroom and a bedroom.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, just fucking. That sucked too. Mine is like on a smaller scale than yours, but yeah, we had a sink get fucking the sink, the bathroom sink, which shares a wall with my bedroom, that got busted. And yeah, there was dirty water seeping through the floorboards and shit.
Beautiful.
It was great. All this mold and shit in the inside of the walls. That was great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, I had to take a little vacation to get out of there, and because I had nowhere to shit and sleep.
You took a little vacation to go see Mission Impossible, didn't you?
Yeah, it wasn't the plan. We canceled like 2 times, and then we were just like, and then Courtney was like, yeah, let's just go see it. And then it was like 11 p.m., and goddamn, that was really late for that movie. holy, Courtney fell asleep.
Like, yeah, didn't get out till like 2 a.m.
Yeah, Courtney probably. Fell asleep like 8 times during that movie. I don't even blame her. It was just, it's been a long, like, it wasn't like a vacation. It was more like, we need somewhere to sleep.
Yeah, like know? That. Yeah, like yeah. a get out of town situation.
Yeah. Come back renewed and tackle more renos or help my dad out with them and stuff where I can. But yeah.
I reached today. It was funny. We were doing some stuff in the bathroom in our bedroom, and I will reach a point in home renovation stuff where I feel like I'm close to the end, but then I start making like small mistakes, and I'm like, oh fuck, I gotta do that over again. I'm doing that now, but we're not even like 30% of the way through this thing, man.
I can't
it's
even.
It's a fucking nightmare.
That would. Yeah, that is a nightmare. That was like me. I spent like 3 hours building IKEA furniture, and you realize you screwed up like one of the beginning steps.
You gotta go backwards.
And shit. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Or there's like a piece where it's a 50-50, you had it the right way and you didn't.
So that happened to one of them, and it was like 2 nightstands, and I built one of them backwards and the other one forwards. And I was like, I'm not doing this again.
Yeah.
I tap out.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I complain, but I understand the privilege of being able to do it.
Yeah.
The privilege of being able to do it. Listen to you. Showing that gratitude.
And you were mentioning, you're talking about, you kind of feels you, makes you more motivated. And not me too. Like, I've, in the last like 2 weeks, I've played maybe like an hour and a half of video games, which is like the lowest ever. And I've been like, I just want to do shit when I get home. I want to fix something. I want to paint something.
Yeah,
you know?
It does something to my brain where I'm like, well, let's keep the motivation and the fucking like the moss off this bitch.
Yeah, let's get it going.
Basically,
that's what I'm into. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Dope.
Yeah.
What you've been watching? So in the middle of all this.
In the middle of all this, let's see. We have watched the entirety of the last season of Handmaid's Tale. Which
I heard good things.
Ended stronger than I would have thought.
How many close-ups of Kate Moss's
so
face?
So fucking many, and it's okay. Elizabeth Moss, by the way.
Oh, that Kate Moss. I wish it was Kate Moss's face.
The last episode was a fucking turd. Like the literal last episode, but the penultimate episode was actually a really cool sort of like wrap up to the whole Handmaid saga. But they're also doing like a spinoff with her daughter, and apparently it's happening soon because that girl's only getting older. So I think it's happening soon. But it's fine. I enjoyed it the last season. We also watched The Last of Us.
Yes. Okay.
Hell yeah.
This is where it doesn't come in handy to like have the Discord. And to be texting people because I've already said all this stuff.
Yeah.
Look.
But you guys feel free to talk about it because I know.
Sure, I ain't watching.
I think the show, this the whole second game is going to take 3 seasons, 3 to 4 seasons to tell the story.
That's what
they're saying.
Yeah.
So like I know that there's not going to be a spoiler to the end of the game. So feel free to talk about it. I probably got to the end of this season.
Being that they lost a whole half of their audience in that second season.
I heard, yeah.
I think it's unlikely that there's going to be 4 seasons at this point.
It's going to be like The Walking Dead, yeah.
I think they might be like, oh, we're going to have to wrap it up in the third one. But
yeah,
as it's set up, the whole third season is going to be from Abby's
perspective, yeah.
Which would fucking, that would be better. Okay.
Yeah.
No, but so look, like I've had arguments from one side where initially when the season started, people were like, "Oh, well, you didn't play the game, that's why you don't like." And it's like, I'm not talking about what it gets from the game and what it does. I'm talking about as a viewer, the characterization, how it's written. Of course, it has good production values. It's an HBO show. They got great production values. The pacing. And look, the biggest thing with me, there's this culture war online about freaking Bella Ramsey. it's turned into a culture war, and so it becomes very polarized. And if I'm talking shit about Bella Ramsey, it's because you're a Trump supporter or something. No, like, I don't think she's a good actress. And if I had played the game, when I look at the game, does that seem like Ellie? No, but do people have to look exactly how they look in the source material? No, but I think the line delivery is poor. her faces are very autistic. I'm not one to talk, but I mean, I'm not trying to play Ellie either on the show, you know? But then, like, and look, anytime she's on the screen, 90% of the time it's not working. And as written, as the character is written along with Dina, I am having a hard time seeing how, not only that they're badasses, I'm having a hard time seeing how they would survive at all as written. They don't show them to be resourceful. Every now and then it shows them fight some zombies. Not enough.
And they're terrible at it.
They're terrible at it, like, without fail. There's a couple things they show Dina, like, she's good at, I can't remember offhand, but it was, like, where she's resourceful in a situation. I'm saying you need to show that they're competent. Like, you need to show that. And I'm not just complaining that they're girl bosses and all that. I'm saying, like, fucking, I don't get how they'd be surviving. There's no fucking way. And all of that. The second episode was fun.
Yeah.
That it was a payoff episode. It's got some action and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But damn, dude, was it a slog as it kept going?
Yeah, this season was, I mean, I can't say it enough. Enough? Okay, I can speak. Unbelievably boring. I just to a level that is kind of unbelievable. Not that I want to be like, oh, I want my lesbians and I want them hot and I want them to fuck. But these two people have zero fucking chemistry together. It's crazy. Like,
And as good as an actress as Isabel Merced is, like, she has to work extra hard to convince us that there's chemistry.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I like, gosh, who's the Japanese fella?
Oh, that's a mistake.
What's a mistake?
Japanese. No, I'm just kidding. No. The Asian dude. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So his chemistry with Dina was so much more
believable.
Like, I actually felt sort of like a kinetic and frenetic energy between them. Ooh, which kinetic. Which is like the brakes get pumped like a motherfucker when Ellie, I'm gonna be a dad. It's like, come on, dude.
And also you, and it seems like, oh, we're just being dicks because of the non-binary. No, dude, like, it's fucking, she just finger banged her. Like, that's all. Like, you're gonna be it's a little assumptive. Like, you're gonna be a dad because you just finger banged someone. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's not earned. Like, there's not enough's been established with the characters, and yeah, the delivery was crazy, dude. Like, they're just throwing ammunition at fucking at MAGA retards watching the show. They're just they're like, here, latch onto this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad news. Oof.
That's sad.
It was sad, dude, because that's what I mean. And then you're on, like, you'll be online and people, anytime someone puts a meme up of the I'm going to be a dad, it's like someone comes in attacking them for being, you know, anti-trans. And then the people attack them back for being woke. And then I'm over here, like, looking at both of them like, you guys are both fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Like, the scene was bad.
No, yeah. And it's true, because in season one, like, no one was talking about Bella Ramsey. Like no one cared. It was like, yeah, it's fine. She's fine as
idiots Bella. Cared.
Yeah,
right?
I didn't care as much in the first season.
I didn't care at all in the first season because I think that the show was carried more by Joel,
and the ensemble,
and the ensemble. Like this second season has, like, laser focused on, like, four people, and I don't care about most of what's going on.
Yeah.
There's things that are happening, and it's like, how did you get here? How are you here?
Thank you for it's very contrived. Like, they show up right when they need them to.
Yeah,
and it's a big fucking area. Like, it's an abandoned city.
It's an abandoned city with fucking zombies rolling around.
Not too many of them.
For like not three many, or four episodes. Not many of them.
Yeah.
And you know, people are fucking teleporting. Ellie's teleporting on a boat to an island that got capsized. And then she's teleporting to a fucking an aquarium. And then she's teleporting back to another building. And then what's her face?
That last episode? Yeah.
Her face, like, teleports to where they are in the theater. And I'm thinking, I go, well, who's... Somebody's got to be watching this stuff and seeing, like, well, maybe we shouldn't. And none of it makes any sense. The scars don't kill Ellie for some unknown fucking reason. that poor baby is dying the entire time. She's squeamish about cutting a woman, but has no problem shooting people in the face. It's crazy. All of it's crazy.
That part I really... No, I'm just kidding. No, but then I saw someone online too. They brought up the I'm going to be a dad part, and then like someone comes on and they're like, I guess you didn't see the payoff for that line in the final episode. It's like the payoff was that she fucking let the baby die. Like, oh, you didn't see the payoff, dude. Like, yeah, I'm going to wait 4 episodes for the payoff for this shitty scene.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
That's rough, dude. It's rough. It's unbelievably rough. And it was... It was one of those things where episode 1, episode 2, okay, we fucking now. And then 3, 4, 5, 6, it was like, dude, this is.
There's literally only one good episode, which was 2.
I would say 2, and also there was a flashback episode with Joel.
And that's another
good which one. The whole, a lot of people said the episodes, like IMDb, it's got a pretty high one along with episode 2. For example, right, for what that's worth. But, you know, I like looking at that. So do you and stuff. But I didn't even think that whole episode. It's also very like, dude, it would matter a lot more if the rest of the show was good. Mm-hmm. But there is a very poignant scene because of how fucking well acted it is with Pedro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like the look in his eyes and a question she asked him regarding something that happened in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, that's a good scene. Like fucking Anne scene. Good stuff.
Shit,
I'd say 2 episodes worthwhile out of 8.
Yeah, that's rough. It was rough. I mean, I would say if you're playing through the game and you watch season 1, just call it like that's the only season they made, and
that's pretty much where Courtney and I are. Yeah, we're just gonna play the game and not watch the show.
And that being said, who's the lady who plays Abby?
Deaver, Caitlin, yeah. Seaver, Deaver.
I always say it, and I'll say it again. Like every time she's in something, she's fucking impressed.
She kills, yeah.
Yeah. And I know she doesn't look anything like she did in the game. I guess in the game, it's like some super buff.
Yeah, she's pretty buff in the show. She's not.
Well, I think it's supposed to be, from what I read, really exaggerated in the game, right? But either way, she has the countenance and
She's banging,
gravitas.
Yeah, and I think she was a last minute addition.
Yeah.
For the show. And, like, I guess she, like, just buried one of her parents in real life and, like, went on and, like...
She was bringing that.
Yeah.
Bring it, dude.
In that scene with Pedro. So, I'm like, damn. Good for her. Yeah. She does look more like Ellie, though, in the game. That's for sure.
Yeah. Even when she's got relatively... I don't want to say throwaway lines, but lines that there's not much to do with. It's, like, her motivation is...
Fuck. He's not Japanese. He's Korean. God damn it.
You did it, man.
You corrected yourself on the air. Good for you.
I was going to tell you, too. You could tell he's Korean, man. Okay. No, but, yeah, she's great. And that guy's a cuck. Like, totally. He's literally... Now we really sound... But, Last of Us, don't do it. No, but...
Well, dude, even... Someone online was like, yeah, she... You know, his character says... I know if I was in danger, you'd go through
burn
heaven
down
and hell.
The world
and,
for me.
But
yeah.
Like, not if it's Joel's brother. Like, she just doesn't care about that.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. The character motivations aren't consistent. Like all of that. Yeah.
Trash.
It's trash.
Trash.
Look at there. It is trash with a little trash can
trash.
Emoji. TLOU-trash can emoji.
Damn. Let's see. In prep for the film coming out, I watched 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later,
which we have episodes on both, by the way.
Can I tell you?
Really?
28 Weeks Later.
Fuck.
Not aging so well.
Oh, because of the CGI shit.
The helicopter scene. It was on TV when I left. I watched like 20 minutes of it.
So
it's like eye gouging scene, and that's it. And the intro.
Oh, the intro was fucking.
The intro is one of the best fucking intros.
I'm like, is this Danny
horror.
Boyle? Did Danny Boyle like just like do a guest directing in the beginning?
Yeah. And the music, dude. Like the musical cue with that one. Like when it gets so fucking hopeless, it's like, damn, this is good.
Just,
shit.
Just the stuff where you know the kids are finally coming into town, And it, you know, they're on the thing, on the trolley, and they're like, "You're the youngest person in fucking blah, 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 blah." And it's like, I don't care about any of this stuff, man.
That's Alex Garland, dude.
it is aging for me worse than 28 Days Later, which continues to get better every time I watch it.
So your rewatch of 28 Days, it's fucking
phenomenal. Yeah, fucking phenomenal.
Isn't it crazy with Dan, like, and all of them, but Danny Boyle, like even like the car, like they have a car and they're going like not a road trip, but
the
like
tunnel. You're talking about the tunnel sequence?
Well, it's a tunnel, but I'm saying like even little things, like the color of the car, like and with like, cause it's super indie, right? Like his stylistic stuff. What color? It's like a blue car.
Is that the taxi cab?
Yeah. All of that stuff. Like, well, it sounds like, what am I talking? I'm talking about like the selection of these things, which make it more cinematic.
Even in that, in that same scene where they're driving by like a flower field and it looks like a painting, or it is a painting.
That's what I'm fucking talking
about.
That
shit is masterful. Like, you're watching it and you're like, is that, did they make that a painting? And sure as shit, it's like an oil painting.
Yeah.
But
it also doesn't come off like super showy or forced.
Yeah.
Like, it's really like, nah, like this just happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That fucking movie, it's raw and it's like a slow descent. Like that third act goes so dark.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, yeah, it goes very,
the real enemy, dude.
It really takes it there.
It really takes it.
And that scene too, where like the dad, Gleason Sr., right? Mm-hmm. He gets the fucking blood in his eye. Like such a sad scene, dude. And he, like that's just, it's great.
It's good stuff.
It is. It is.
What and else? Then, what did I watched a bunch of stuff by myself kind of randomly, but I've been going through war movies again. I watched 13 Hours again.
Yeah. You saw, did we talk about Warfare? You saw Warfare?
I haven't seen Warfare yet. It just dropped on rental. It's $25 right now. I'm not trying to spend.
You watched 13 Hours?
I sure did.
I still haven't watched it once.
Dude, there's some great battles. There's some fucking spinning cameras on a mortar.
I just don't want to vote for Trump afterwards, man.
Don't worry.
Is it about Hillary's emails?
I've seen it 6 times, and I still haven't voted for Trump.
You're kind of a Zionist.
My Michael Bay fucks with just like practical squibs with like the explosive debris everywhere.
Yeah.
Has all this texture. Like I rewatched like half of Transformers 1 and all of the
FPS mortar shots, man, are great because like you see the mortar come up and then down and you're like, I'm the mortar right now.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
It's fun. It is a fun movie.
But that's it.
War movies,
Last of Us.
Well, yeah, Handmaid's Tale. 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later, Handmaid's Tale. That's pretty good, man.
That's not bad.
I'm going to do the rewatches real quick, Jacob.
Okay.
And then that way we can align on this other stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
I had never watched those Equalizer movies, actually. I watched all three of those. That fucking dude, that dude being Denzel Washington. What the fuck, man?
Dude, he's just snapping necks, man.
Well, and his fucking eyes, dude. Like, he embodies that fucking, I believe it. Like, I believe he's done some fucked up shit all of a sudden, right? Dude,
yeah. That Home Depot commercial in the third act of the first movie, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's a fantastic fucking, like.
Now you see why my parents watch it, like, every month.
Splatterfest right there in Home Depot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun stuff, and it's super. It's Anton Fuqua, right? Mm-hmm. He does all three of them.
Yeah,
he does great with. He's good with imagery. He's slick. He's good with editing, but also like these movies. It's funny because they are super manipulative, like crowd pleaser movies. Like
100%.
They're very sentimental. They're very like, here's these two subplots, and like this, he helped this old guy, and he helped this
kid.
But also, stuff, you're gonna see this guy's fucking like eyes get gouged out.
Yeah, he's helping the community.
Yeah, and Denzel, like, it's a prime example of him elevating whatever material he's in. Like, it's fucking great. He says, like, 16 seconds, and you know you're in for some cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
I like the second one, even with, like, Pedro Pascal was in it. That was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't good.
Pedro Pascal in something, dude?
In something, dude.
I saw Equalizer. I've never seen Equalizer 3, but I saw 2 in IMAX, dude, and with it blown up, the CGI of that whole hurricane shit
at the end
was so fucking bad. Oh, it was off
on the TV.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it was so bad, dude.
Oh, yeah. I was forgiving of it, though, because I wasn't in for high art pretty much, but damn, did they rebound with part 3 in Italy.
Which I keep hearing, because it looked awful in the trailers. I'm like, oh, it's dead now. This franchise is dead. But people were like, dude, it's fucking... That's the one my parents have seen like 8 times.
The only thing about part 3 is I wish there was a little more, but I think it's Denzel's best performance in the trilogy. He's got like a full-on theme now, like musically for the character. The use of Italy is fucking great. And the climax of that movie is fucking brutal. And it was fun. Good. I think all 3 of them, at least 2 of them are on Netflix. But anyway, so I was way behind on that. Like, I'm following this thing where it's versus matches. It's some podcast. Mm-hmm. But they kept saying John Wick versus Robert. I forget the character's name now.
The Equalizer.
Yeah. The Equalizer. And I'm like, fuck, dude, is the Equalizer like fuck that hard? And yeah, he kind of does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think John Wick, but if he had time, prep time, like he might be able to fuck some shit up. Tropic Thunder, Dodgeball. That was fun. Tropic Thunder's fucking a... Dude, I mean, seriously. Talk about a movie that's getting better with age. It's like fucking up there with like Blazing Saddles as a satire now to me. Like as a one of those... I mean, it's fucking great, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I rewatched Foxcatcher for the first time since it came out in 2015.
Nice.
It's, yeah, dude. It's got to be like the most... It's the quietest, most mournful... Yeah. Sports movie quotation marks ever made.
The fact that you've seen it twice is crazy because it's like a one of those bleak one time watches, you know?
Yeah. and Sophia was like kind of like thrown off by the dryness of it and the pacing of it, but then started, you know, it's like a true crime type appeal, but it doesn't treat it sensational. It's not sensationalized at all.
They're not really taking liberties. They're just keeping the story simple. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's actually, it's 10 years out, and I think it's a all 3, Mark Ruffalo, Channing Tatum, fucking Steve Carell, all 3 of them do a great fucking job. I like Bennett Miller. He did Capote. He did Moneyball. He did... Yeah, he's a solid dude. Anyway, the director. Rewatch Tombstone.
Nice.
Fucking dope.
That's a good flick.
Val Kilmer's dead, dude.
And he's dead as fuck.
I watched a film that I had not seen in a while and Sophia had never seen, and it's called Hotel Rwanda.
Yeah, a little cheerful little movie.
What a fucking film, man. Like, and what a good film to watch in the present moment about the genocide in Rwanda. And have you seen that movie?
No, I know of it, but yeah, I've never actually watched it, no.
It has the pacing and, I don't want to say entertainment value, but the suspense of a good thriller, but is about something that's extremely wrenching, and also though it has like a lot of humanity, it isn't fucking ghoulish about it, but it also doesn't like pull its punches. It manages to pull all that off, and it's very character driven. And Don Cheadle, like, it's almost a shame like he went and fucking took Terrence Howard's job, because goddamn, he deserves like a fucking... He was so fantastic in that movie, dude.
Yeah.
And then some theater watches. Not the new stuff. The Tree of Life, Digital Gym here in San Diego. Shout out to Digital Gym.
Shout out.
That's bad. Take that out.
Nope.
Digital Gym is like the last standing fucking indie theater here in San Diego now after Landmark Hillcrest.
Yeah,
closed. Terrence Malick's Tree of Life. I hadn't seen it since it came out. Famously in my life, I saw that the Tree of Life the same weekend as Transformers: Dark of the Moon.
That's crazy.
Jesus Christ. It was like both ends of the spectrum. Kathy, my ex-wife.
Yeah.
I went and saw Tree of Life with her and her parents. And they were angry. They were so angry about this movie. Which means it's really good.
It means it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sophia hadn't seen it. She loved the fucking movie. And damn, dude, Terrence Malick, talk about a signature fucking style. Have you seen this movie?
No. I haven't seen many Terrence Malick films.
Me either.
I've seen like maybe two. I know that director is very mysterious. Like, there's not many pictures of him online, if any.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's very secretive.
Yeah, it's an experience, and it's not for everybody, but I still need to watch Badlands, which has a fucking dope premise too. People go on a killing spree in the fucking Badlands. And like, that sounds cool, and it's Terrence Malick. Days of Heaven I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Anyway, they showed a showing of Metropolis, the Fritz Lang one, at a church with a live organ performance, performing a score that was written for the movie by an organ player in La Jolla. And this was like it was a sold out show of watching Fritz Lang's Metropolis in this fucking church with an organ playing. And look, I've said this before, it's hard to get through movies in 2025 when you're watching them at home when you got your phone, you know. And it's a fucking silent film from like 19.
Yeah. Just finish the movies on your phone, and that takes care of that.
Yeah, there's no way I would get through Metropolis this without watching it in a theatrical experience, and this was a fucking very singular experience. Like, dude, everyone, you know, as a cinephile type deal, you know, the influence it had on Blade Runner and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. But dude, like, the fucking the amount of stuff he was able to pull off visually with this, and also like the whole premise is like the top of the city is people living in this super technological fucking utopia, and all the workers work on the levels below it. So it's completely like a fucking a socioeconomic political film, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was great. And then Kiki's Delivery Service, because they do the freaking, every year they're doing Ghibli. these fucking Studio Ghibli things.
Yeah.
And I love that movie, but Sophia loved it, of course.
Hell yeah.
I actually fell asleep in the middle of Kiki's Delivery Service.
Damn. I've only seen like two Ghibli films all the way through. Courtney's like the expert on those.
Which two have you seen?
I've always seen Princess Mononoke is the one I watched a ton growing up. And then Courtney showed me Howl's Moving Castle. You haven't
seen Spirited Away?
Not yet. She really wants me to watch that next. She said that'd probably be one of my favorites. And then I did watch like half of Porco Rosso.
Okay.
Which is fucking dope. Michael Keaton.
That one I haven't seen.
He's fighting fascists and stuff. And then I watched like half of Ponyo because my niece, she's like a year and a half and she loves Ponyo. That's like her movie right now. So I watched some of it with her.
Dude.
Yeah. What else you seen?
And then The Rehearsal.
Yeah. We talked about that.
Talked about it on the pre-show. Rehearsal season 2. Nathan Fielder. I'm sorry. Like, I'll just use it. He's fucking, I mean, I love the dry humor. I love like the layers of it. I love the autism. No, I'm just kidding. No, but then, and he does talk about that in the show. But the premise of this one has to do with, what do I want to say? Aeronautics?
Airlines?
Airlines. Yeah, he's investigating some very specific stuff about airlines, which is strange timing given what's gone on this year and all this stuff. But he really goes into it and where it ends up going with social psychology and the insights it has and the humor and all of the commitment to the bit and to the surrealism.
Yeah.
It's fucking just
even
with classic fucking stuff.
Even when he's doing like a press thing for the show and he's doing interviews, you still don't know if he's doing a bit or not.
Yeah, recently he had an interview and they brought up that, on CNN, and they brought up that they didn't agree with his kind of thesis, and he's like, well, that's dumb. They're dumb. And it's like,
and then he was like,
and it's like, is this a bit or what?
And then he started like kissing their ass at the end about CNN. He was like, and I just want to let you know, like, in a world with all these alt news, I want to thank you guys for always telling the news straight and stuff like that. And he just started just kissing their ass.
Damn. Well, and it's like, you know, CNN, you don't have to be like some fucking Trumper to think CNN is a little bit like, they're a little engineered, you know? And then, what else we got here? Oh, The Shrouds, David Cronenberg's new one. You know, David Cronenberg is elderly and he's nearing the end of his life and all that good stuff. He lost his wife a couple years ago, which was the major, like, I guess, creative catalyst for this film, which gave it a lot of context reading about that before. And I think for most of us, myself included, fucking Crimes of the Future, his return to body horror and all that was somewhat of a disappointment.
Yeah.
I still didn't hate it. Because I like the cerebral bent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And do I think his best days are behind him? Like, Yeah, absolutely. But still, he's out here swinging, and this is a much better fucking film
okay.
for me, and very interesting. And he still has some really new left fucking field ideas that really have a lot to mine conceptually.
Oh yeah,
in this movie. So you know the premise, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely handling grief and then basically paying for a service where you can watch your loved ones decompose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it came from his own life where he said when he saw his wife in the coffin, he wanted to just crawl in there with her.
Yeah.
And he said it wasn't like emotional. He said it was very visceral, like physically he wanted to get in there.
Yeah, and that's why there's a lot of sexual aspects.
As usual.
In the film, too, because of being able to miss your partner in that capacity as well. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed it. And even, like, Sophia, she had just watched Crash with me and hated that fucking movie. Like, she liked this one a lot better, but it still has its weird Cronenberg sex scene. And when I say weird, like, he's the kind where the thing's uncomfortable, and then he has the people talk to each other during sex.
Yeah.
Which is saying stuff that you're never supposed to say.
Yeah.
So it's super fucking uncomfortable.
That's good. Yeah, and I think that's good. I say that because I think I mentioned it in a previous episode, but, you know, Cronenberg has always criticized sex scenes in films for, like, when it happens, it pauses the entire narrative. And all of his sex scenes, he wants to continue the narrative. He wants there to be a point to the sex.
It's a part of the story, right? It drives the story. Yeah. And that makes, you have mentioned that before. That makes a lot of sense. It's not just fucking,
you know. It's not just fucking.
It's not just fucking.
Mm-hmm.
If only.
But he seems to have a favorite position, because it sure does pop up a lot, that spooning behind the lady thing. So, yeah, it's great. But watched all these fucking Mission Impossible movies in preparation for this one.
Same here.
Yeah, so this is a good segue. And my ranking is very similar to the one you put on fucking Discord.
Yeah.
It's 8 films in all. I recognize, of course, people's mileage with these may be different, but... for listeners, especially if the majority are like more horror inclined. But I mean, Jesus Christ, dude, like, this started as something in 1996, and then the second one was fucking trash, and then it kind of had a course correct. But even part three, the gap between part two and part three was like 5 years.
Yeah.
So I was like, what? We're still doing these?
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, like, once we hit Ghost Protocol, the fucking shit just got better and better for like 3 of them.
Those 3 films, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Holy shit, man. That is just like the perfect trilogy spy espionage. Like, I don't think any 3 007 movies can be that consistently good back to back like that. I don't think there's... You know, I don't know. Maybe back then, maybe the older films.
I'm thinking.
But holy shit, man. Because when I watched it, it was my first time watching most of them.
No, because, I mean, obviously not the Daniel Craig one, because Casino Royale is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quantum of Solace sucks ass. So it's already broken.
A Quantum of Suck.
Yeah, Quantum. And what is that fucking name? Quantum of Solace. Oof. Like, what are you talking about?
Skyfall was dope.
Skyfall's fucking dope.
And the other one. The octopusy one. What was the one after? See, I completely...
There's 2 more. Spectre.
Spectre, that's
which is like, you threw all the stuff at it. It has the same director, Sam Mendes.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking incredible locations. Incredible fucking, like, cinematography. And super slow.
Yeah.
And then the last one...
No Time to Die.
No Time to Die, which I saw in the middle of the pandemic. And it's kind of faded from memory.
Which is unfortunate, yeah.
He has a kid.
Yeah.
I don't want Bond to have a kid. Anyway, back to the thing at hand. Yeah, 4, 5, and 6. Fucking great, man.
Yeah.
And specifically, that's Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation. That's when he gets Christopher McQuarrie.
Fuck yeah.
And then they fucking peak at Fallout for me.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. And then Dead Reckoning. And then this was all leading up to Final Reckoning. And Final Reckoning is probably the second worst overall of the series, but it's a very good series, excluding part 2.
Yeah, it's still like 1,000 times better than 2, you know, but it's still the second worst.
Yeah, this is the closest though, like the fucking, I'm thinking about the bad guy, Like, he's like, catch me if you can, Ethan Hunt. Yeah. It's like fucking, it's like a Fast and Furious fucking situation. Yeah.
There's a scene where, like, this government cabinet member goes, son of a bitch actually did it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, God damn, dude.
Yeah, and so this is it's a special one, too, because the last two movies in particular, it's a heist setup, so of course you're going to have exposition, right? They've always done this in the series, but in the last two of them in particular, Cruise and McQuarrie got really, like, distrustful of the audience. They're like, we need to spell this shit out, like, 15 times.
Yeah, and I'm not going to, like, I kind of get it. I mean, they shouldn't have done it to this extent. It was poorly edited. They could have dumbed it down for the audience, but not edited it like a YouTube recap video, like Watch Mojo shit. Like,
well, what got me, Jacob, was, like, they're doing the exposition, and so they got their thing, which is already all stilted exposition dialogue, and they're like, we're gonna put five people in a room and they're gonna say a line of it, and then the next person's gonna say a line of it, and then the next person's gonna say a line of it, and then it cross cuts to another scene of another group of people giving the same exposition, and then like 10 minutes later they gave it again, and then they showed it at the beginning of the movie when he's like, your mission should you choose to accept it, which was a recap of stuff that he would already know. It was like,
yeah, and then you got flashbacks to scenes 2 minutes ago, and I could not believe it because I read that online and I'm like, no, they really do that.
Yeah.
And but we're even with all of that said,
yes,
it's got the two we're talking of the entire franchise, two of like the greatest set pieces.
I agree.
Yeah. Out there, it's which is so wild to think that it's one of the worst because of how bad the exposition is, but at the same time, the two for ranking only stunts and set pieces, it's two of the best of the entire franchise.
Yeah, the stuff in the submarine, what they managed, I agree with you, what they managed to get out of that, and how creative it was, right? Yeah. All the different obstacles he runs into.
When just like a video game, if there's an underwater scene, I'm like, I'm fucking done. Like, I don't want to deal with underwater shit.
Yeah,
but this made it fucking rad.
Yeah, because you don't have to, you're not in charge of, you know, having to fucking navigate all this bullshit that's happening. And then the other one is the fucking plane sequence, which has been much, much hyped. Mm-hmm. And for goddamn good reason, like, it's very similar to the end of Fallout with the helicopters, except with biplanes. And again, some really good character work in there. Like, what I mean by that, like, dude, this fucking character, he is resourceful. Like, he's on the wing, and he starts recognizing, like, hey, I can control... This is manual. Mm-hmm. He can start controlling the plane with the fucking the levers and stuff.
Yeah.
And anyway, all that kind of shit.
And a lot of the movie's analog with the technology because of the whole AI thing. So it's fun. They're doing the biplane, and it's very Buster Keaton, old-school stunt stuff. It's a total homage to, like, really old-school stunt performances.
Sure. The analog fucking room, too. The Doom fucking scenario room that was all Doom, analog. Dude. Well, dude, I love the whole, like, apocalyptic bent of it, too.
Yeah.
They got these, dude, they have these anti-natalists that want to, like, kill the fucking, I'm like, that's me, dude. Like, you're good.
Want to kill the baby.
They're the good guys. No, I'm just kidding. No, they want to, like, make sure the race fucking offs itself because it needs to go. And they're, it's like, what, these are the good guys, man.
Oh, it's actually kind of like a dope story, like with the villain, but like it's handled so fucking poorly.
Oh yeah, dude, and it's super contrived, man. Yeah. I'm sorry to say that. Like the Solomon Lane villain of parts 5 and 6.
Yeah,
like he was a good strategist. And this stuff, it's like, oh, fucking Gabriel showed up there before them. Do we know how? Do we know when? No, no, he got there before them. That's it.
All roads lead to this type of thing. Yeah.
But you fucking saw that movie at 11 o'clock, though, huh?
Yeah, I was pretty tired, too. Courtney fell asleep like 8 times. I don't blame her at all. Yeah. But to make up for it, though, I think the night before that... well, did you watch anything else?
No, dude. We're segueing into our stuff.
Okay. I did watch Lilo and Stitch.
Oh,
live action, and then rewatched the cartoon afterward, the animated film, and I was like, holy fuck, that's way better. That's more like it.
Man.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I would say the human drama is better in the live action, but there's way too much focus. I was like, this is fucking dark. We're done with CPS and stuff, and, you know, custody of, God, you know. Damn. I was like, this is fucking bleak. it was whatever. It played it too safe, and... All the omissions in the live action were just terrible choices.
We're supposed to go watch the How to Train Your Dragon biz this weekend.
Yeah, Hell yeah. Yeah, yeah. I need to... I still haven't seen the animated movie. I know, and it's like a fucking bona fide classic. That's crazy. Yeah.
I didn't see... Were there three of them or two?
I think there's three.
There's so many.
Maybe four.
Like, there's like a bunch of little spin-off movies,
and too. And the first movie is not out yet, and they already greenlit a second one for the live action.
But...
It looks fun.
I loved the first two.
Mm-hmm.
They were dope.
I love them.
Yeah. I love them.
So, I also saw Clown in the Cornfield for that short run that it was in theaters.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Courtney read the book, so she was just curious. You know, like, let's just watch it. And that was the amount of just secondhand embarrassment watching that, because it was like the teenage cringe was too much. It was literally meant for teenagers. You read all the articles praising it. It's praising it in the way of, like, this is good entry-level horror for the slasher genre for teenagers. Like, this movie was built... for like 14-year-olds. It was not the target audience. So it's almost hard for me to even criticize it, because I'm like, I just don't get it. Like, it was like crazy fucking, I don't want to say we're pandering. It was like, there's a lot of forced stuff in there. And it's like,
if you use the word pandering, you support Trump.
It's hard. Yep.
That's what that means. The word that's been around for hundreds of years before him means that only.
Yeah, things were just handled so lazily for the sake of it. Like, they're really trying to piss off boomers, you know, and people were walking out of the theater during a gay kiss, and I'm like, hell yeah. But also, like, it was super dumb, though, because it was just like...
It doesn't make it automatically good.
Right? Yeah, like the way they're trying to deliver these scenes, they want, like, people to stand up and clap, you know? It was fucking... I would say the level of embarrassment was, like, Jeepers Creepers Reborn, when, like, the teenagers are being Jesus teenagers.
Christ.
And there was a lot of that exposition.
That's bad. But
that is, like, the most I'll ever talk about this movie, so I'll move on.
You don't want to do a show on it, dude?
Yeah, no. I caught a little special Q&A screening of The Surfer with Nick Cage.
Oh, that's right.
That was a fucking awesome movie for a film that takes place in a parking lot for 90 minutes. It was really cool, and the descent of madness of Nick Cage doing his thing, and the Q&A and him talking about how all of his certain scenes and lines are homages to this, and it's the most Nick Cagey shit out there. And surprisingly, it wasn't like some Mandy, like he's going to go crazy and murder a bunch of people. It's definitely like a slow descent into madness and a lot more grounded of a film. There's no crazy psycho murders left and right and shit. It's very
bikers summoning demons.
No, it's about acid. Yeah, it's about locals, fuck. Localism, which I didn't know, like, that's
localism,
like,
is that like globalism?
Yeah, no, just like locals fucking gatekeeping, you know, certain areas. So, which I had to like Google. I was like, I didn't know that was like a real problem, but it makes sense. Yeah, so it takes place in Australia, and he grew up there, and there it's like locals only, and he's like, I used to live here, and like, too bad, and they just torture him, and not torture, but like, you know, slowly make him go crazy.
They take his surfboard that his dad gave him, dude.
Yeah, they're a cult that's very like Fight Club-y kind of cult, and I'll leave it at that, and it's interesting where it goes. It was very unexpected turn in the third act, but I highly recommend it, and the way it was shot was insane. It's a noir film almost. It's a neo-noir. Like, it's a slow burn. It's crazy, weird jazz music. And it's stylized in a way that I had no idea, you know. I wasn't expecting it at all.
Dude.
I watched a little film called Ma in theaters again. Courtney and I love that movie. It's like a little inside joke. We just had such a, like, a delightful time watching it. And we quote that movie, like, weekly.
That's with Olivia David or Octavia
Spencer, yeah. And she
took that shit out, dude. No, we did an episode on that too.
Yeah,
this is from what, like 3 or 4 years ago? 4 years ago,
probably. Yeah,
6 years ago, maybe.
Yeah,
now?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
And you know, it's nothing special. It's formulaic, little thriller, and it's not like ultra gory. It's whatever, but it's something about Octavia Spencer in a role like that. I love when we get characters like Sally Hawkins and a movie like Bring Her Back. You know, seeing Octavia Spencer in a role like this was fun.
You're saying you like Bring Her Back, dude?
Did I? I don't know. Yeah. But it was a fun little fan event, and Courtney and I quote the movie all the time, have fun, and then we show up, and like, the theater is like more than half full.
What?
And it's like a cult following, and I felt like among other fans, and it was really fun, and everyone's just like quoting the film and clapping. It was like, okay, it's not like too obnoxious, but It's yeah, and then they just today announced Ma 2. Octavia Spencer did on TikTok.
What?
So yeah, I'm excited for it. Yeah, it's so silly. It's a dumb. It's a fun little dumb movie, and yeah.
Holy shit!
And shit. Started watching Andor. I'm way behind on that, but I'm like 5 episodes deep, and it's fucking dope.
Tony Gilroy. It's like Gilroy. The only good Star Wars content.
Only
right?
thing, pretty yeah. much. Yeah,
Tony and, Gilroy.
Yeah, he said he hates Star Wars and he wanted to do his thing, his version.
That's something him and I have in common.
Yeah.
Jesus
and,
Christ.
He made something man. Great out of it.
It has gotten so dark for Star Wars, dude.
Right. That's oof.
Yeah, I want
to
watch
dude, it. Nah, dude. Return of the fucking Jedi, top 10.
Oh, shit.
Revenge of the Sith,
top 10.
No, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
Like, what the fuck, dude?
Like, leave some room for things. Like, what the fuck?
And then I saw a little Thunderbolts.
Yes, me too.
Fun. Way that exceeded all my expectations, and I've never been more nervous going into a big Marvel movie like this.
What do you mean?
You know, because of the track record, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, and I didn't have that much hope, but still, I'm like, there's something about it with some of the marketing had me intrigued, especially when they're flexing all the A24 shit.
Yeah.
And I really thought like that's pretty. They're grasping right now, and they're a little desperate. Well,
because they know that the people that are really driving the theaters outside of these. You know, couple big weekends a year are, you know, people like ourselves that are paying attention to those kind of niche things,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that was good marketing.
Yeah. And that movie exceeded all my expectations. I had unbelievable amount of fun with it and the characters and I think it's one of my favorite looking Marvel movies, like the palette and the cinematography. It's the closest feeling I had when watching Winter Soldier, which is like in my top 3 MCU films. So it felt really cool and much more grounded. Yeah.
Even with the marketing, because I went ahead and let my expectations like go fucking almost nowhere for it.
Yeah.
And even with that marketing, I was like, it felt desperate a little bit. I'm like, whatever. If it ends up being good, it ends up being good. It, just like you said, it was much better than I expected it to be. The characterization, like the pacing of it, great stuff. In a very like accessible mainstream way about mental health, incorporating Sentry and the shit with the Void, like fucking dude, when they started that stuff with the Void and he's voiding people out and all that, like I'm like this is fucking dope,
yeah,
like this shit is good. It went to like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, like Marvel movie fucking dark sequences, like not expected, There was a lot of stuff about... It's Bill Pullman's kid, right?
Yeah.
He did great. And, of course, help me out here.
Florence Pugh?
Florence Pugh, thank you. Yeah, she was the best part easily of Black Widow when it came out. That movie was trash.
Yeah, even though people were making fun of her accent and all that and stuff, like she was still the strongest part. And then like now they utilized her like to her fullest extent, and she's doing Tom Cruise level stunts off buildings and shit.
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah,
she was great. I liked fucking Kurt Russell's son's character.
The U.S. agent. That was the whole thing. They're taking all these characters that were kind of goofy and kind of redeeming them in some light. Yeah,
and then the stealth kind of like reveal of the you know, quote unquote new Avengers, mm-hmm. which is gonna, you know, so it was nice. It's like a throwback to good Marvel movies.
Yeah,
but again, like Guardians of the Galaxy 3 for post Endgame was good. This was good. Fantastic Four is not look. I am.
I've seen that trailer in IMAX. Have you seen the trailer in IMAX?
Yeah.
I think some of the sickest cinematography.
It looks... Like, no, yeah, like dude, I'm worried about like, some of it. Like Silver Surfer and...
Or the dude playing Thing. He's like, are you pregnant?
I'm are worried about a lot of things like that.
Are you
that.
Pregnant? Like, I think he's the biggest fucking miscast for Thing, bro.
I even think fucking dude, and like we really have been liking this guy recently, Joseph Quinn, right?
Yeah.
He's on a fucking roll.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a fucking bit of a weird casting choice for Johnny Storm.
They said he's doing a completely different take on it, where he's a kind of a smartass, but he's not a dick like at all.
Well, that's not what... No, I'm just kidding. No, and then...
that's not what I want.
Yeah, and so what else? What else? What else you got?
Last one is a little movie. It's the only film out of all the things I've seen that I saw twice in theaters. The only movie I've seen twice in theaters in a while, I think, but Friendship, Tim Robinson... I've been a fucking massive fan of Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave, and since the beginning, man. And this
sure
was
about that?
You sure about that? This is one of the Courtney and I, when we're having just like a rough day and we're drained, we're like, let's see if there's a showing of Friendship and let's try to go make it out there, you know. And I probably want to see it one more time before it leaves theaters, because that is like, I haven't laughed that hard in so long, man. Aside from like some Tommy Wiseau bullshit, like this was fucking one of the funniest films I've ever seen in theaters. No hyperbole. Yeah, that was the fucking craziest thing, seeing that opening night with all these other fans, people dressed with all these I Think You Should Leave meme shirts and stuff, and like everyone's eating it up. Yeah.
We were at the preview showing the same night as you.
Yeah.
But like I think the showing 30 minutes later.
Hmm.
Yeah, and fucking dude, completely agree with you. And I had just, I'm late to the thing with that show, but we had just binged the whole thing a couple months ago. And it's fucking hilarious, and I've been stuck on it, and I've been stuck on the fucking, the bones are their money, so are the worms.
Every week you'll find a new skit that you'll just obsess over and over.
It's fucking, dude, I could watch the show like every day, even though I've seen the skits.
Yeah, like today I had a conversation, show my friend Little Buff Boys, you know? That's that's my go-to.
Or Sloppy right Steaks.
Yeah. And Chiffani's. Yeah.
But dude, I loved it. It was fucking, we do want to see it again as well. Gosh, what is there? When you see the trailer, it's like, is this like a suspense movie? It's a, you know, I had a buddy who's like, is it good? It looked like it's supposed to be funny, but it's kind of like marketed like a, like something darker. I'm like, it's a dark comedy. And it is, but it's also just fucking straight up his absurd shit. Like it's a good platform for that. And it's as close as you can get to like stretching one of his skits to a feature-length film.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that scene when the dude shows up in the garage, and that whole thing, how that plays out, he's like, who the fuck are you? And like all that, dude, like, I cannot handle that. They ask where his wife is, he's like, she's in the sewer. Anyway, it's highly, you'd have to watch it to know what we're talking about, which is good, that's why it's not a spoiler. Yeah. I loved Friendship. Are you going to see it?
Yes.
Excellent.
Not in the theater, though. Shocker.
Dope. Why not in the theater?
No time.
Fine, then.
That's fair.
And then we saw Final Destination Bloodlines.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw Bring Her Back. Yeah. Which is the Philippines follow-up to Talk to Me.
Mm-hmm.
That Matt did not know was Rocka Rocka, but loves Rocka Rocka. No, I'm just kidding. Matt is a former... He's a co-founder of the show and former host.
And we love him. And current idiot.
You ate breakfast, dude?
I ate breakfast, dude.
When?
I rewatched Predator, dude.
Oh, man.
I forgot, dude. We need to talk about Predator because we've never talked about Predator.
It's so mid, dude.
Yeah, Predator 2 is fucking so...
Hell yeah.
So much, way much better.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing that. Don't, man. We don't need to do this. We don't need to do
Dope, man. Dope, man.
Yeah.
Got another thing planned. Remember that one?
Nope. I was doing dope when that came
out. You were not. Oh, that's like 97, so maybe.
Definitely. It has begun. No, but dope at that time was just weed.
Yeah. Guess what, gentlemen?
What?
We're fucking back,
We're back.
We're back.
You know who else is back? Patreon.com/WhoGoesThere podcast. That's where you can become a Patreon member.
Yeah.
I wanted to do it at the beginning of the show.
You know who's back?
Who's back?
Well, I mean, by the time this is, he may or may not still be.
Donovan's
back.
Donovan! And you spent some time with him on Memorial Day.
We did. We had a nice little hangout. We cooked up some dogs.
That's good.
Had a couple brews.
I flaked out last second.
Yep. Super cool.
Yep. Very
on brand.
Very, thanks a lot. He said that, huh?
I said that.
Yeah, well, that's good. You took care of it, so he didn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, would be very on brand for me.
True.
So, it's not like...
Yeah. No, seriously, though. Like, I had wanted to... You know I'd wanted to come.
We were talking about doing, like, a mini high school reunion.
Yeah, once you started doing that in the text, I started getting like, whoa.
Because we were talking about like who would be invited and who would be like, yeah. Who, and it was like, well, like, if Kenny's there, what's going to happen? If blah, 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 blah's there, it's like, all right, I like this. The idea.
It was scary. They started conjuring some
you thought scary. We thought you were like.
I thought I was going to show up here all fat. And then it's going to be like, dude, I need to lose 20 pounds before I see these people.
Before I can see Carlos again.
No, I think he's probably gained some weight by now. He's doing fucking deadlifts and squats all the time. But is anyone else new besides Donovan?
Not that we haven't talked about.
Okay.
Yeah, we good.
Dope.
Patreon.com/WhoGoesThere Podcast. Thank you to the Patreon listeners. Exclusive content. You get the episodes early. Jacob, not too long ago, sent out some care packages.
Yeah.
We've got a Hans episode coming up soon.
We've got a King Hans. King Hans is the lord of our Patreon. He's benevolent. And we watched The Night Flyer recently. And
that dog lives rent-free in my fucking
That's
head.
That's the one, huh? They caught him in the middle of some real shit. Yeah.
No, Jake,
I thought it was a fake dog.
You said they did something to his mouth.
Yeah, because right? I was telling Courtney about it, and then like took her 2 seconds to Google what it was. He's like, you know, like, yeah, I guess they attached like fishing wire to his gums to like lift his mouth to make it look like he's snarling. But it was so distressed that he was trying to remove it, and that's what we saw. So it's really fucked up.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, and then he kept
still
it.
A cool little.
Yeah. Yes.
You fucked up.
You fucked up. Well, we watched a little movie. 2025 is 2024, depending on when you watch it, I guess. A little film called The Rule of Jenny Penn, directed by James Ashcroft, starring Jeffrey Rush, Nikki McDonnell, Maka Pohatu, John Lithgow, and a bunch of other fucking people. It's an Australian film. And we're back to Australia after who knows how many years. Last time was what? The Loved Ones?
It's like the last good one.
Probably.
Yeah.
There's got to be something Australian. Australian horror? Come on.
Yeah.
Come on now.
We got another one coming out.
Come on.
From the director of The Loved Ones, the Dangerous Animals.
Ah. Hey, I didn't know that's who directs it. Yeah. I am intrigued by
the
that
The Devil's
trailer.
Candy director.
And you know. You know what, too? I'm glad.
I fucking hate The Devil's Candy so much, dude. And when people are like, on Reddit, are like glazing The Devil's Candy, it fucking drives me insane.
Devil's Candy is on Shudder right now for all those who want to watch it.
You know what you should do? I'm gonna bring back an old bit. If you enjoy Devil's Candy, you should drive your vehicle.
Oh geez.
To the nearest cliff.
Oh man.
And just
look, man. There's no
just go.
There's
just,
no reason to be that way,
just
man.
Just go. Share the passenger seat with your friend who likes the Babadook.
What if they're Zionists, though? Should they do the same thing?
Yeah, and in fact, more so. More forcibly, I think, right? I'll have to take that out, I think.
Oh, fuck, man.
But yeah, but Australian horror.
The question's great. It's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that we've been doing this for 2 hours, I'm warmed up.
Yeah, yeah. Now that this is you warmed up? Yep. Jesus Christ. But anywho.
Why did we mention Australian horror?
Why did we mention it? Because
isn't this New Zealand?
Well, that's the same shit. Colonizers.
It's funny, dude.
It's not.
It is.
We laughed. It was funny.
To us.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You're right. But I'm just kidding. I mean, come on, man. But anywho, correct me if I'm wrong. I could be wrong. It could be a New Zealand-based film.
Once upon a time, it was a very similar conflict.
See? I don't even know where to go from where you're at, dude.
You don't have to go. We can go way back to the Babadook, because I believe she's Australian. Is she not? Jennifer Kent. I believe Jennifer Kent is an Australian director, and she did a follow-up called The Nightingale. That movie.
Fuck! So, anywho.
And it's in Australia.
the IMDb synopsis is as such. Confined to a secluded rest home and trapped within a stroke-ridden body, a former judge must stop an elderly psychopath who employs a child's puppet to abuse the... It's not a puppet, by the way. It's a fucking doll. The home's residents with deadly consequences.
Okay, wait. Before we go any further, how... Yeah. Does he stick his hand up it to...
He created a puppet, but it's not originally a puppet. It's just a doll. I'm sorry.
It's a puppet.
It is based off dementia dolls. Yeah.
Yeah. I know what it's fucking based off, bro.
He's got dementia, dude. I made
dementia dolls. No, but I mean, if the homie shoves his hand up the thing and starts doing shit, it becomes a puppet. It becomes a puppet.
If I shove my hand up you, do you become a puppet?
If you shove your hand in a sock and start doing that, it becomes a sock puppet. It's a fucking puppet.
Was it a ret puppet?
It's not a puppet because it was a doll.
Hmm.
See what I'm saying? This is important. This is just as important as the debate about stuff going on and over in... Okay, go on. I didn't even say anything, man. Okay.
Where are we going? But I don't even know why you're saying it. It's not like it's relevant to what the fuck we're talking about.
I know. You said
well, it's relevant.
And I saw this guy like...
It's relevant to a logical fallacy called a false equivalence.
Yeah.
Which can show up in anything. So it is relevant.
Anywho, Jacob, what'd you think of the movie?
This film came out of nowhere. It was screened for like one weekend or like one week at the theaters.
Probably too much.
And I caught it randomly, and I'm so glad I did because it's one of the biggest surprises this year for horror for me. Just when you watch the trailer, it looks like some cheesy supernatural, like Annabelle spin off, you know, rip off kind of thing. You don't know if it's supernatural or not. I don't know what the fuck I'm getting into. And, you know, right away I'm like, oh, is that going to be like a hagsploitation film? But, like, that would be, calling it a hagsploitation film would be doing it a complete disservice because the film is actually really well done. And it's like a much more layered story about, you know, the loss of autonomy. And, you know, on its surface, it's just, yeah, it is a fun, crazy, chaotic movie with the... insane psycho old guy played by John Lithgow, but you know, it's, I like that it handles itself to not be exploitive, and it's like really there's so much absurd shit in it, but it really gets darker and darker as it progresses. And I don't know, it's kind of just depressing just watching, you know, a character like Jeffrey Rush just slowly lose you know, some of his abilities, and feeling trapped, and paired with some of the cinematography, it gets very claustrophobic, and the performances are great across the board, all even the supporting characters. I was just really surprised by it, and yeah, I fucking love this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
Rhett, what'd you think?
Jessup agrees. Jessup is one of the hosts and founders.
Former host,
Say You Love Satan podcast out in Philadelphia. Was talking to him about this movie. He had a little thing saying it was genuinely depressing and great performances. Completely agree. And I was very surprised by this movie as well. I agree with almost everything Jacob said. Jonathan Lithgow and fucking Jeffrey Rush. Having both those guys in your movie is going to elevate the material anyway.
Yeah.
That being said, Sophia, she works in, you know, in the field with dementia for the elderly people. And she really, this movie really spooked her out. And she said, for the most part, it really is, it rings very true with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And how it handles this stuff, like you were saying, I don't want to get into the thematic stuff immediately, but about like the loss of autonomy, loss of control, how it depicts like, dementia is, you know, you're drifting from one moment to the next and it's completely disconnected and you don't have a sense of connection with time. Mm-hmm. And then you have the mobility issues. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, it gets gradually darker and darker, and it gets fucking stuff. Jonathan Lithgow does stuff in this movie where it's just like immediately cult classic material.
Yeah, you're laughing out loud, but at the same time, just... completely uncomfortable.
Yeah, like I was messaging Jessup. I was like, who rules? And he's all, liquor, asshole. It's just fucking insane, and it goes a lot. It has, says a lot about the illusion of control.
Yeah,
and then eventually everyone loses that. Mm. And he's a judge. You know, the character is a judge who is condemning people one moment, and the next, fucking, no one takes him seriously about anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, what'd you think?
Here's where he pretends to be Matt.
I did not think it was that
good,
as you gentlemen are portraying it as.
Was it 30 minutes too long for you? Because that's a valid criticism. He
thinks it was an hour too long.
I found myself kind of
wishing for death.
I don't understand how am I trying to take it too seriously? Maybe. I don't understand how a dementia facility or an old folks home, whatever you want to call this,
the card, the key card,
has zero awareness of what's going on with their residents. They would likely in a facility like this that has like key cards for all of their members would likely have cameras and would probably be reviewing this stuff that happens with their residents when incidents happen, just to kind of square things up. And they act like total imbeciles when it comes to how this fella is sort of like doing his like machinations around the facility. Now, with that said, I do think that John Lithgow is outshining Jeffrey Rush in this film.
Well, he's got the fun part.
Which is crazy because Jeffrey Rush is like, he's the dude, right? Like when I think of John Lithgow, I'm like, oh, it's the fucking alien guy from Third Rock from the Sun. He's funny.
What?
You ever see that show?
Fuck that show.
It's hilarious.
Why don't you think of like Harry and the Hendersons?
So there are times when I'm like, damn, like he's an amazing actor, right? He's
Trinity, dude.
But ultimately, I kind of find myself disconnected because I don't understand how he's getting away with what he's getting away with. Because we can talk about it. Is he a supernatural leaning fella? Is he not a supernatural leaning fella? What the hell is what? So I like the performances. I just find myself disconnecting because
he's got away with this for like four or five days.
As they say, he can't keep getting away with it, right?
Well, but he did.
Well, and they do. And the president is the president. So people get away with stuff. Chernobyl happened. You know, we're good. This motherfucker can get away with some shit at a shitty old folks
home. And the director did say...
It's not a shitty old folks home.
No, well, here's the thing. So to address a few things, like you would be... That's part of, like, the movies, actually. You would be very dismayed to see how things happen in the medical field because it's run by...
I wouldn't be because I work in the medical field.
So do I, but you don't work in behavioral health.
Yeah, but...
You don't work in behavioral health. But you don't visit hospitals and spend time with hospitals.
But facilities are facilities.
Yeah, but you don't work in behavioral health, man.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is it just doesn't make any fucking sense.
Look, there's again, there's this false equivalence thing. A lot of it doesn't make sense. Not all of it doesn't make sense. People are fucking extremely negligent in a lot of these old folks' homes. A lot of them. They're very, very fucking negligent.
Yeah, but okay. Yes, I don't disagree, but that's everything.
Okay, that's though. No. That's why I'm not gonna disagree with you altogether. They are very negligent sometimes in these old folks' home. And I think it's hyperbolizing that. Like, you're not going to have a dude outside with an open fire. That's ridiculous. You're not going to have a guy, like, Sophia couldn't stand that he had a key card. Something as simple as that. They have a thing where it shows him he's an ex-employee, and he's been there for, like, 40 years, right? And so that's why I think it goes into the idea of what if he's supernatural or something, like you're saying. But I don't...
Well, I got the feeling that I got from it was that all of the members have their own key cards. Like, everybody has their own key card to access what they can and can't. So, like, a resident has access to their room and a bathroom and the kitchen and the cafeteria, and he just happens to have a card that gives him access to more
areas. You remember the part where he's looking at the pictures and it shows that he was there?
Yeah. He's there. He's been there the whole time.
Like, and that's what I mean. I don't think it's like The Shining. I think it's implying... I think it's saying something, and again, it's a bit like, I'm not taking it that literal, because what's the likelihood of a guy working at a facility his whole life and then becoming a resident there? Unlikely, but not impossible, right? But the thing is, the key card in particular, right, it comes into play when the old lady, who he's sending out to die in the middle of the fucking night or in the early morning, he freaks out to go after her to get the card back, because that card has access to rooms that hers does not.
So
that's the thing, though. He's able to move about with mobility and like and go places other people can't because he's got this access card, right? And I think it is a fucking contrived plot device. However, if I want to take it as like he's a person that's been in a system long enough that knows how to work it, that's what it is. Like that's what it is. And they don't witness anything that fucking happens. And all that kind of stuff. And then she's got a resident right now that fucking is very similar. Now, does he fucking have the puppet and say lick her asshole and stuff? No, but when he goes like and he goes in the middle of the fucking thing, he goes and terrorizes the other fucking people and they have to call the cops. Do the cops want to it comes to this fundamental thing.
Do where the cops want to arrest a fucking
No.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. Where do you put people? You can't kill him. So it goes back to like, so some of that, like, do I agree? Like, dude, like, for long stretches, they're just fucking in there. Like, he's disrobing this woman and nothing's fucking happening. You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, because that's the shit that pulls me out of it.
Yeah, I agree. I was able to overlook it because when I say overlook it, that doesn't mean. I'm not like it's a 5-star movie. I think the performances and the themes like fucking overpower that kind of stuff. But it's full of plot contrivances like that. Yeah. Like it's full. It wouldn't work at all. It wouldn't work at all like it does if they weren't like ridiculously negligent and if he didn't have the fucking access card. You know? So I'll agree with that.
Yeah. And one of the themes too, one of the thematic things about the film, the director said in I think it was IndieWire interview, he said the theme of the movie is about tyranny. It's about a dictator that rises to power in the least likely of places.
Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah.
Well, and that goes with like again, like I think it's a good choice and it's a fucking intentional choice, obviously, right? Like that the fucking guy is a judge and the way as characterized. Like he was really like reveling in doling out fucking punishment for people.
Yeah,
and then like
completely justified, right? Like he's throwing the book at the mom who let a pedophile.
I'm just kidding.
which I'm not trying to say like it's her fault that her daughter got raped or whatever, but like you know,
shame the victim.
Oh, victim blaming, dude. But I do like what they're doing. You know, he goes into this facility thinking, you know, give me a couple weeks and I'm out of this bitch, right?
Yeah.
Which we all know isn't the case because he's severely ill at this point.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't. That's the thing. Like, yeah, you're absolutely right. That doesn't get better. There's no like dementia doesn't like. It's once you get to a facility like that, it's not like I have a cold. It's a degenerative disease, right? Mm-hmm. Well, in that sense, it is like fucking dental stuff. Like if you don't get your dental stuff fucking fixed,
hell yeah.
Is it gonna? I wasn't trying to be a fucking dick about it, man. No, I just said if you don't get your dental shit fixed, it's gonna keep falling apart and get worse and rot.
Yeah,
and then this one, there is no fixing it. There's just like
It's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
The film totally weaponizes a lot of these natural fears super unique way. And I'm terrified of, you know, rotting away in a home like that and being scared of losing all my faculties and stuff. And
yeah.
I think, and just impairing it with, how, like I mentioned earlier, the cinematography, like, and it utilizes these shots and singular spaces, just a lot of just normal just rooms, just square rooms, and having to be creative with the shots and stuff. Yeah. I don't know. I felt pretty pretty pulled in for most of it. I felt like it could be maybe 15, 20 minutes shorter as some of like the terrorizing kind of you know, get not, I wouldn't say gets old, but you know, the point is driven kind of right away.
You wanted less of those scenes? I'm sorry, I'm standing up, my leg cramped here.
Yeah, I mean, I just felt like some of the pacing kind of slowed down in the midpoint for me. Yeah.
I think the film is doing its best when we see those like torture scenes. I think those are the most fun.
That fucking the New Zealand dude where he's like ripping out the catheter and shit.
Yeah, that's fucked up, man.
Yeah, like all of that stuff. And Jonathan Lithgow's face, like with glee and
just
stuff.
Pure yeah. glee. And they've yeah. given him these like these fucking bad teeth prosthetics, which is crazy.
And contacts and
he got a fat ass too in that shower. I'm just kidding.
His inspiration. John Lithgow's character was heavily inspired by Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet. That's what he was channeling with that.
Yeah, and see, there are really good scenes of dialogue, of character mm-hmm. development, but also very thoughtful dialogue, which makes sense, too, because these are people that, like, Jeffrey Rush's character, his mobility is very hindered. And there's a part, for example, where he's talking about, he's wondering when he became this, right? When he became, there was a time he had imagined being surrounded by grandchildren and loved ones.
Yeah.
And he's wondering when he gave up on people, like he gave up on people. And it's like that stuff, that incorporating those elements into this end of life scenario. Cause again, there's the fear of fucking dying with dementia and losing your faculties. And then there's the fear of dying alone. Mm-hmm. Right. And then there's also like the broad majority of these people at homes, they have families, but the families put them there. So they don't, number one, they are not able to deal with the problem. And also they don't want to deal with the problem.
Yeah. They can escape from it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually not very common outside of in most of the world. It's a very fucking like, you know, midsummer, it's time to just yeet yourself off the fucking thing. You got to go.
Yeah. You see a lot of it too on social media too. It's like, you know, parents of like heavily autistic kids, like dropping them off at like a government facility. It's like, holy fuck, man. Like,
yeah.
how do you have the fortitude to do that to yourself?
Right. Yeah. So there's that element too. And then Jonathan Lithgow's character, what's his name too? Creeley. Something that's me, dude. He's basically me, dude.
That's why you're so mad.
Yeah, that's why I'm mad, dude. Because he explains that like in a fucking scene of really like full disclosure towards the end, around the end, in the third act, that he's amounted to nothing, and that like life somehow afforded him these kind of advantages at the end. But it's like, I'm not admiring his character. He's a fucking horrible character. Like, he's a fucking horrible, I don't want to just say human being, like, frequency of consciousness. Like, whatever the fuck he is, whatever he's inhabiting. Mm-hmm. He's like the lord of his realm, right? Because it's not just like, oh, he's sneaking around. It's like the sneaking around is part of the point because
it's the least of it.
Yeah, he's getting over on all them. Like, they don't know shit. Like, that's part of the power play that they don't, is the anonymity of what he does.
Yeah.
And he's using, like, everyone around him is completely, the idea of having a predatory dude who's much more aware than people think he is in an environment like that, that's kind of, that's something. Because that's something you run into different versions of, too. You know what I mean? Hmm. Well, no, because, like, you'll have people in a program that may not need to be in the program, but that's where they find themselves, and they end up being very predatory to the fucking people around them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I liked all that stuff, dude. And if it's like, if it wasn't Jeffrey Rush and Jonathan Lithgow, which I saw are also executive producers, mm-hmm. which is dope.
Did you see that Jeffrey Rush basically like did a movie in 2019 and then took like a six-year break, and then this is the last like, thing he, like, yeah. the most recent thing he did.
I didn't see that.
No. Yeah, so, like, crazy, yeah. Jeffrey Rush, I looked at it earlier, and so he did, he did Storm Boy, and then took a break, and then 5 years later, The Rule of Jenny Penn.
What's going on with him?
I don't know, dude.
He's getting ready to die, dude. No, and that's the thing too, like, you know, like, I'm sure what a privilege. No, but seriously though, they haven't lost their faculties. These are actors in their golden years, right?
Yeah.
And so how do you as a human being, like, in your art form, begin to, like, freaking come to terms with those things?
Yeah, because there's actors that feel like they're too above roles like this and playing just an elderly, you know, person. And
right.
Just being old, just being an old person. And, like, I love that they embraced it. You know, it just shows a little bit more of, like, a vulnerable side to their acting as they get older. And you know, one of the things I wrote, just, I love seeing these much older protagonists in films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, do you?
The protagonist?
Yeah, dude. The protagonist. What was the one from last year with the old lady who was inspired by freaking Mission Impossible?
Yeah, I never watched that one.
Dude, you would dig that shit. When I was watching this again last night, I started... This is, like, that's the nice version of this.
Yeah.
That's the fun version. This is the light version of this.
She just got, like, a fucking... What was it? ScarJo just directed a movie with her in it.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, got, like, a big standing ovation. Yeah.
That's cool. That's it.
That's it?
No. That's not it.
I will say... I mean, I did mention the movie does progressively get kind of dark because you think it's silly, but the film does kind of establish its tone. First 8 minutes, you get a guy who sets himself on fire, and I wish it carried that, because the first thing I'm like, this feels like some Ari Aster shit, a guy just setting himself on fire.
Well, and it's that kind of stuff, yeah, because he dumps the fucking liquor, he spills the liquor on himself, he's got his lighter.
Yeah.
One, what's great to me, I'm glad you brought it up, man, like, and then Jeffrey Rush, again, like, a few minutes before in the film.
Yeah.
He's a judge, and now he's relegated to being outside watching this guy light himself on fire and just help.
And being completely helpless.
Helpless, yeah. Complete, and no one's even listening to him. No one's even fucking listening to this guy.
And I think that kind of just sums up kind of what you're in for regarding, like, the danger he's in and the lack of safety and shit, yeah.
Well, and it freaking, dude, like, the fact that, like, you know, that Jessup, for instance, Sail of Satan, dude, like, says it's genuinely depressing. It's like, that means something. That means the movie did its job. It's genuinely depressing because it does, it's not just because it's outlandish or something. Yeah. It's genuinely depressing about the stuff, some of the inevitable stuff, which is, like, we don't really know where to put people. Like, we don't really have full control over the situation. There's nothing we really can do.
Yeah.
Like, you might end up alone. like all these things, they are very fucking uncomfortable to look at, and it's not like, you know, like, and it's like, well, why would you, well, it's a horror movie. Like, fucking, if that's not the territory for psychological horror, then I don't fucking know what we're doing, you know? Yeah. Like, that's totally on brand.
Yeah, this could have easily been, like, a just shit Blumhouse production.
Ooh, that good missed, point. That they the, should. They will be.
They would have missed.
They'll remake it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
They fucking will, dude.
Yeah.
With young people dressed up as old people. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking. I was like, this could have been handled so much more poorly. It would have been an exploitation film. It would have been jump scares and all that. But this is way much more. First of all, much more lower budget. Much more independent. But just a lot more thoughtful and carefully executed with both on the technical side and the performances. And yeah.
What's up with this writer-director?
I didn't check out his other stuff. Is it a first-time feature? I forgot. I did look into it.
It seems like it might be.
Let's see.
Let's look at this.
Brother. Let's take a look. I was thinking about that, like, having a relatively low-budget movie and you manage to hit... You know, managed to be able to get Jeffrey Rush. It's got that same energy of Dogma when Kevin Smith gets what's his name?
Chris Rock.
No, not Chris. Fuck Chris Rock. The dude who's dead.
Did you see it?
Wait, that's not what I think it is. No.
Coming Home in the Dark. This is one Matt and I had talked about before, and that's another Australian one. This family's out in a rural area in the middle of nowhere, and these two guys come up on them, and it gets worse and worse.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's just, it doesn't, like, make good on the premise, in my opinion.
Alan Rickman. That's what I'm thinking about.
It's kind of like a Eden Lake type movie.
Yeah.
Not the same situation, but, yeah, that kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Coming Home in the Dark.
What was the Australian one that was the campers and it had like the dual narrative?
Ooh, I fucking loved that. I
bring it up to somebody.
There's a maybe. Swedish one.
Was it Swedish? No, I thought it was Australian.
What was Swedish camper horror?
Courtney asks me about this movie every time and I forget the fucking name of it because she was very disturbed by it.
We both Swedish were. Camping movie?
No, it was Australian.
There's another one I'm thinking of. Do you remember the Swedish one that had like the freaking they told a story about how they lost the child with the and it had like it portrayed as like a puppet show with a bird?
Oh, Wolf Creek.
No. It's kind of like
Killing Ground.
Thank you.
I haven't seen that one. So that's different. Okay. So Australia. Fuck.
You haven't seen Killing
Ground? Australia no, does fuck, dude. That's what I mean. I was like
questioning if that's what it was called.
Let's see.
Yeah, Killing Ground. I thought you've seen this movie. That's fucking bleak, dude.
Is it good, though?
It's good. It's very good.
Do they quote Hemingway, dude?
It's got a 5.8 on IMDb.
Oh, that's right. This baby gets fucking yeeted, huh?
In Killing Ground? Yeah, it's a dead baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fucked movie.
God damn it, this is going to drive me nuts.
What?
This movie that came out a few years ago about this couple that lost a child and they're going through all sorts of crazy ass grief and they're out camping and then like this other traumatic shit happens and it was a great fucking movie and I cannot remember the name for the life of me. For the life of me, I cannot remember.
It's a camping. It's a Swedish camping horror movie.
It might not even be fucking Swedish, dude. It might be fucking Dutch. It might be Korean.
No, it's
definitely not. It's definitely not Korean. It's got some crazy ass fucking name. Oh, yeah, we'll figure it out. But yeah, Jonathan Lithgow. Seeing him, he's. You know what, dude? He was on NPR talking about this movie too when it came out before I had seen it. And then that was around the time you texted me, but I was like, oh, all right, you know. But he was like, early on, he was in a bunch of De Palma movies. Like, when you watch the, have you seen like,
I'm halfway through Dressed to Kill.
And that.
Still haven't seen Blowout.
Okay.
John Lithgow's in Dressed to Kill? Because I know Michael Caine.
No, Michael Caine's in Dressed to Kill.
Michael Caine.
He's in Obsession. Did you ever see that one?
That's the one I haven't seen. Yeah, yeah, I haven't seen that one either.
He's in Obsession. He's in, he does Raising Kane with De Palma. Did you see that one in the 90s? Yeah. Oh, and then in Cliffhanger.
He's like the badass boss in Cliffhanger.
He's a fucking good bad guy in Cliffhanger, dude. Have you seen Cliffhanger?
Of course, yeah. When I was much younger.
Fuck, dude, that's a good rewatch right there. That one's fallen off the radar online.
I loved him. Well, his zaniness and those peaks in The Rule of Jenny Penn really reminded me of his role in Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh yeah, he's the bad guy in that too.
Scientist too, he's pretty mad in that.
His name is Eric Quaylen in Cliffhanger. That's crazy.
That's a dope bad guy name.
That's dope. What else can we talk about with Jenny Penn? It's on Shudder.
Yep.
So if you haven't seen it, I mean, I would recommend it.
I'd recommend it too. As much as I'm like, ugh, the fucking, why would they and how could they? It's fun.
Yeah, that's
what I mean. It's a fun movie.
The performances and the premise, it goes pretty far on that. I mean, that being said, now that like we're talking about it, I mean, it could have been an all-time classic, but it could have been a Blumhouse fucking trash fest.
Yeah, I would love to have this film, you know, backed with a higher production company, whether it's like A24 or Neon, something a little bit more high profile, because you know you do see. It's, you know, indie budget in the film itself, but, you know, thank God it's got, you know, that star power. And I think it is a delight to see Jeffrey Rush. Like, I think the last time I saw him in something was King's Speech. And then before that, fucking Mystery Men. It's Casanova Frankenstein.
Damn, what about fucking Pirates of the Caribbean, dude?
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah. Barbados?
Barbasso, right?
Damn, Barbasso? I didn't fucking remember that. That shit all blends
Barbasso?
Together.
Barbasso?
Sure.
Something like that.
What about Shine, dude?
I haven't seen that many films with him in it, dude. That's it.
That's the one. That's one that put him on the map. That's what he won Best Actor for in the 90s. Really? Yeah, it's he plays, you know, Never Go Full, and he doesn't. He plays a dude with some kind of impairment who's a fantastic pianist.
And that's why he won.
and he does it great, and it's a true story.
He stopped just short of going full.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, because if he was full, he wouldn't be like a world-class pianist.
Yeah.
It's like Forrest
Gump. Yeah, you just got to have a touch of the tism. You can't. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what makes him.
They need to interview him about that. Like, what's your secret? What's the secret?
What's the secret? Well, you don't go full read.
Yeah. We should rewatch that one. Let's do Shine on the show. No, I'm just kidding.
Shine movie.
Let's do a slate of those films.
That's what I fucking, dude. I'm. Oh wow, 7.6 for Shine, 1996. As a child piano prodigy, David Helfgott got musical ambitions generate friction with his overbearing father. Oh yeah. Travels to London on musical scholarship. However, the pressures of his newfound fame, coupled with the echoes of his tumultuous childhood, conspire to bring his latent schizophrenia boiling to the surface.
Oh, he's got that blend of the tism.
Which is like, everyone loves that one because it's like, it has nothing to do with like, you're not cognitively impaired. You just have cognitive interference. It's not like you're dumb. Because the worst thing
is being dumb. If you're and fucking having a dumb, disease.
Yeah. Just get out.
If you're dumb, you've already, because you are an enjoyer of the Babadook, you've already...
Hey, man, come on!
You've already gotten in the backseat of this car that's hurtling off a cliff.
We should fucking watch The Nightingale so you can...
Oh, my gosh.
You can have a reckoning with Jennifer Kent, dude. Would you watch The Nightingale?
Sure.
There's no kids in it.
You sure?
Just babies.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
fucking, dude.
But are they dying?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm in.
It's fucking brutal.
As long as the kids are dying.
You're like, there's no kids. Just babies.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, my God, that's a fucked up scene.
Yeah, there's just so much fucked up that you forget about the other fucked up stuff.
I think I, like, tried to omit that from my memory. Yeah. That's a very... I wouldn't even try to show Sophia that movie.
Same here. I have to find specific time to watch it.
And then they're dragging this, like, an indigenous lady from Australia. I'm sorry. Freaking, what's the name of the people out there?
The Aborigine?
Yes. They have an Aborigine lady. Sorry, I'm tired. They have an Aborigine lady, and it's these British colonial guys, and they're dragging her around for like 2 weeks, just beating her and raping her in the middle of the fucking outback. Mm. It's fucking, it is like unflinching about the whole colonial situation.
The feel-good film of the summer.
And that's why it is a perfect comparison with nothing else that's going on in the world.
Yikes.
Cool. The Rule of Jenny Penn.
The Rule of Jenny Penn.
I think like 2.5 thumbs up.
I give it for the performances.
I mean collectively.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you give it yourself out of 5 stars?
Out of 5? It's like a 3.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's not bad. I give it 3.5.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest surprises where I came in just like as a blind watch surprise, but like, you know, is it going to make my top 5? No.
I'm never going to watch this movie again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched it twice already. Jonathan Lithgow, I might watch it again to see him act like a fucking fucking wild man.
I'll make an edit and then you can just watch that.
I'll just watch that over and over again. Yeah. As long as you've got lick her asshole in there. Of course. That's all you got.
Yeah. Next one, while do we want to take advantage of it while it's still in theaters, is Final Destination.
Absolutely, yeah, I'm down. Final Destination, bring her back. And
I want to watch both of them in the theater, so I may do like a little back-to-back action.
Sounds next good. Week.
Dope. You haven't seen either of them?
Mm-mm.
Oh, nice. Mm-mm. Are you going to go with Ronnie or no?
Probably bring her back, yes, but Final Destination, she has zero... connection to that franchise, so she's like, I don't give a fuck about
that. It's hard to stay quiet with this shit. It really is. It's been fun.
All right, cool. Well, that's episode 437 for the Who Goes Your Podcast. This is Jorge signing out.
This is Jacob.
This is Reed.
Ooh, bye, idiots.
Bye, Sophia.
There it is.
I'm not gonna worry, wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be alright, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive.